As always, a thank you to everybody who has attended. Everybody has a day job. There's other things to do. Most everyone here is headed to Boston for the annual PBS Say Show in a couple days. So this week and next week are short weeks for all of us. We're cramming everything in. You guys took an hour out of your day to join us. We respect that. We put a lot of pride into these webinars and these product spotlights. We want to make this as informative and valuable an hour for you guys as possible. We're going to do a little geography, right? We're going to talk about the size of the market. We're going to talk about the opportunity. What are some of the intricacies of doing searches in this part of the world? And why do we need strong vendor relationships to be able to handle that? We want to move past, as CRAs, as providers, as end users, we want to move past that first initial uncertainty and complexity and really peel back and capture that opportunity as we look to serve our clients better. And like Jason said, throw your questions in. A number of them came to us already when we were preparing the webinar. We'll get to as many as possible. So you guys know Jason, you know me. Really happy to be joined by Stacy and Clayton today from Latin American backgrounds. Jason, why don't you do 60 seconds on iCubed? We'll let Stacy and Clayton do the same, and then we'll dive in.
Excellent. Well, you guys all should now by now know iCubed Advisors. We are a boutique advisory firm. We strictly focus on the background screening industry and supply chain in that industry. We have a multitude of services that we offer. One of the things that we're starting to do a lot more of is M&A advisory. We represent buyers and sellers of companies, and it's something we're doing quite a bit more of these days. Recruiting, we bring top talent into our clients' firms. We've had a huge, very high success rate, and a lot of the people that we've been placing over the last 5 or 6 years are still in those positions. So pretty proud of that.
Yeah, we love doing this.
That's my favorite part of the job.
Introducing, networking, people that we respect that might not know other people. So bringing people together, whether it's at a PBSA show or something like this, is one of the most fulfilling things about what we do. Stacy and Clayton, why don't you guys introduce yourselves now and tell us a little about your company?
Well, my name is Stacy Holscher. I'm one of the directors at Latin America Backgrounds, or LAB. Latin America Backgrounds is relatively new, as it's a division of McCabe Associates. And McCabe Associates is a company that's been around for over 20 years and in the market of full service corporate investigations. I'm based in Asunción, Paraguay, in South America. And I've been with McCabe and now with LAB for 20 years. And my previous experience before coming to investigations and the private sector is I was a U.S. intelligence officer. And in that role, I spent a lot of time in different countries in Latin America. So Clayton?
Yeah. Hello, guys. Thanks for having us. And my name is Clayton Jorge, or Jorge. I'm a lawyer for more than 30 years now in Brazil. And with McCabe, I'm working for 16 years now. Like Stacy said, we used to do a lot of more executive due diligence, background checks, and we are doing a lot of criminal records and civil records for the past 10, 12 years. So that's why we created a new division of the company. And also, we, like you said, it's a big territory. You know, only Brazil is the size of Europe, so I run Brazil. And also because of the language, you know, we speak Portuguese here, and Stacy runs the rest of Latin America. So that's it.
And Clayton, you're right about the size of Brazil. I'm always reminded of the graph I see every once in a while, which is just so interesting. It's, you know, Brazil is the northernmost point of Brazil is closer to America than the northernmost point of Brazil is to the southernmost point of Brazil. That's always a fun fact. So let's dive in into, we're really the point of this is to look at this map and say, hey, do we know where countries are in Latin America, South America? Do we know Uruguay? And how does that kind of tie into our ambivalence, unwillingness, hesitancy, et cetera, to kind of sell this product with confidence? I know
Yeah,
where the countries are.
can we take a step
Yeah, because a
back?
week ago I took a quiz with my sixth grader. Yeah, go ahead, Jason.
Just taking a step back here, and I'm really, really happy we're doing this. And one of the things that we hear as consultants a lot is, how do I increase business? And the first people say to me is, I want to buy a company, and I try to really kind of talk them out of that, because that can be a difficult undertaking. What I try to convince companies to do as they're getting into growth mode is expanding their product and expanding their product offering. And one of the things that's completely low hanging fruit that's right in front of everybody is international screening. And it's something that's it's complex and it's difficult, because we have over 200 countries in this world. But at the same time, it creates opportunity in the areas that you can be well educated in and build a product around. So
Yeah, I'm glad you're talking.
I
This
think
is exactly where I was leading you. I'm glad you're sharing these thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why I'm really happy that we're doing something like this. And I think that we have two, of the foremost experts out there on Latin America on this call. And I urge everybody to ask questions, because this is a really good opportunity for you guys to build your product knowledge.
Yeah, our vantage point here is, Stacy and Clayton are really our experts on individual countries, the opportunities, some of the requirements as they differ from organizations. We'll talk about the size of Latin America, as a market share opportunity. I'll echo Jason's sentiment. I'm extremely bullish on what this can be for you and your companies, and I'll give a couple quick data points. The publicly traded companies in our space, HireRight, formerly publicly traded, First Advantage, Sterling, for the last several years have historically been claiming about a 15 to 20% of their revenue is international screening. They're large organizations. They can handle the nuance, the complexity, et cetera. But as we look at the CRA market, that gets smaller and smaller. It's tougher for a $5 million company. Even a $50 million company can do that very, very well. But that 15%, I think, is a real good benchmark. I think that's a very achievable number. So when I look at the white space in our industry, if I have to hear that post-hire monitoring is almost as large as the pre-hire screening, if I have to hear that one more time, I'm going to throw up in my mouth. But this Latin American screening, new products, international screening, absolutely. We estimate there's $1 billion. iCubed Advisors Research, there's $1 billion in play through international screening. So really glad that you'd kind of chimed in. A question for Stacy and Clayton. When companies start, as we move to the next slide, Jason. When companies come to you, what are their reservations, their fears? What are some of the general questions that they kind of have when they're thinking of this for the first time? You want to start us off, Stacy?
Yeah, I mean, some of the fears that they're the most common fears are accuracy of information, availability of information, compliance. Can we really do what we say in terms of being able to get the information in a timely fashion? And then when they see the prices, a lot of times they're like, oh, well, this is, in the US, a criminal record check is so much less expensive
Three
than it is
bucks.
in Brazil. Right, exactly. Why is it so much more expensive? And we have to go through the reasons why it is. Clayton, I don't know if you want to mention some of the other concerns that clients have.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, like you said, the accuracy, and also the type of informations, and also our laws here are slightly different from United States. So types of crime are some types of crimes are state crimes, some types are federal. So we need to know where to check and how to check that. But that's why what Lab was created, to make easy for our clients to have that information, have access to that information, because like you said, we are here forever, we know how to do, because sometimes they only say check that, oh, this information is public in Brazil, but public is not all the times, meaning it's easy to obtain. Sometimes you need to go there, sometimes it's on different databases. So we have all the routes and paths to get that information for the clients.
So let's take us another step back. I'm going to kind of throw some wrenches into this because
Yes.
I'm even more interested as I look at this even more in depth with everybody on the call. Let's talk about the market. Kevin mentioned that it's over $1 billion market for CRAs out there to penetrate, but let's talk about the market itself. What are the biggest markets in Latin America? Is it Brazil because it's geographically the largest, or do we see more industry in Chile or Peru? Like I have no idea.
Yeah, I think
Yeah, Mexico. Go ahead.
just about Brazil. Yeah, the size is a big factor in Brazil, and also a lot of companies are outsourcing IT services and other services to Brazil. The dollar exchange rate make that a good deal for the companies. So that combined with the size, and we do have some good universities here, and so especially IT and some other services are being outsourced a lot to Brazil and also to other countries in Latin America, as Stacy can tell you.
Yeah, I think for most of our clients, the biggest player is Mexico. Mexico has a large population. I don't think Clayton, does it compare to Brazil, or is Brazil larger? Not
Brazil is
sure, but
220 million people
okay.
here.
But with the proximity to the US,
Yeah.
immigration to the US, and then operations between Mexico and the US, that's generally the biggest player. Then, as Clayton said, Brazil. Colombia is really interesting now because there's a lot of BPO activity, US and different companies from the different parts of the world setting up operations in Brazil, Argentina, Chile, or other major players. But the biggest is Brazil and Brazil and Mexico.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that they've got large workforces in those countries. Now, from a penetration standpoint, would you say that the concept of background screening is like it is here in the US, where all employees get screened, or is it still limited to certain industries and certain positions?
Well, our clients generally aren't, for example, Mexican companies or Brazilian companies. I mean, our clients are generally US CRAs or companies from other parts of the world. So essentially that's looking at, in the case of Mexico, Mexicans in the US, Mexicans in other part of the world, or a US company doing operations in Mexico.
So
Yeah,
I
like
think, but from a standpoint of a US-based CRA that's looking to grow internationally and maybe start penetrating and hitting some companies that do exist in those countries, what kind of opportunity
okay.
is there?
Yeah, I think that the background screening or culture among local companies is not as robust as it is in the United States, but it is definitely growing, especially in companies that deal with other companies outside of Mexico. Now,
Yeah.
everybody's conscientious of compliance, know your client types of rules. So it's definitely a growing trend. Like 5 or 10 years ago, I don't think it was that way, but it's something that we're seeing that's growing.
So you're hitting a
Yeah.
market as the concept is starting to grow in a country or in countries with growing workforces. I mean, to me, that seems like I'm just salivating if I'm a CRA and I'm looking to grow my business. Now we're talking about 4 out of 250 different countries worldwide. So just from a standpoint of growing your business, this is some great information.
Yeah, and one other thing is like in Brazil, do we have like 1,200 American companies here? Most of the headquarters are in Brazil, like for big companies like General Motors, Microsoft. So there are a lot of American companies here, and they do background checks, and so we are here to assist on that too. Great.
I love listening to the last couple minutes of that, because so much of what Jason was sharing really is for a lot of our attendees here, things that they think about, struggle with, et cetera. Raise your hand at your desk. We can't see you, right? But I'm sure many of you kind of live in this damned if you do, damned if you don't scenario that I'm going to describe. CRAs can either say to themselves, yes, we embrace global screening. We need to know how to do a Bolivian criminal check, and the other 219 countries Jason just mentioned. let's go create a big ugly spreadsheet, which is what we called ours. We called it the bus, the big ugly spreadsheet of 219 companies and the requirements and the processes, countries. Yes, excuse me. And then you just wait for a knock on the door. Somebody says, I would like a Bolivian criminal records check. Well, you just wasted a lot of time, because if you don't get that knock on the door, you just created something, you know. The other side is, well, we're going to wait for somebody to knock on the door and then we'll figure it out. And then everybody runs around like a chicken with their heads cut off. So neither option is really great. And I know a number of CRAs kind of struggle with that. And frankly, there are newer partners on the scene that can help with that, especially in this part of the world.
Yep.
That's something I think of, Jason, when we think of what are CRAs, you know, doing for Stacy and Clayton. This is 1 + 1 = 2 for them.
Yep.
For us in the States, I think it's, you know, it's much more different. This is the Latin American population. If we try and think of the size of the world relative to the size of the region, this is a big number. Stacy and Clayton, you both made an interesting point, which we spent some time on our last call kind of talking about, and that's U.S. organizations that are now opening call centers, manufacturing facilities, et cetera, in different parts of the world. That certainly structurally, I think, is something that screeners and employers aren't thinking too much about when they're looking to manage risk. Can you talk more about the different kinds of operations, facilities, et cetera, that you're seeing pop up in your part of the world?
Sure. Like for Brazil, for example, we have the Amazon state. Manaus is the capital of Amazon. We do have develop the area. The government have give a lot of incentives for companies that assembly like cars or motorcycles there or other stuff, electronics. So we have a lot of those companies in the north of Brazil, which is the Amazon. And like in São Paulo, a lot of finance companies, IT companies, medical companies too. So those areas are increasing in Brazil a lot lately.
Yeah, and the same thing, I mean, with less manufacturing in Colombia, like Colombia has a highly educated population with a good percentage of English speakers. So companies are setting up call centers, customer service centers, IT facilities, and all of that is growing very quickly in these countries.
Yeah, I do have friends that work here in Brazil for American companies, especially in the IT business, you know, because it's very common, from engineers to higher level, low level. So a lot of new positions are being created here in Brazil, especially after the pandemic, because people are more used to work from home, you know. So this is very popular now here in Brazil.
Yeah, I know that's also very popular in Mexico during the pandemic. I know several people that moved to Mexico City and to beach towns in Mexico during the pandemic because of the whole work from home thing. So that's got to have an effect on all of this, I would imagine.
There's a business owner in our space who absolutely did that. He moved to Costa Rica. He was frustrated, his family, as his kids were struggling a little bit with virtual school. And he moved, he relocated to Costa Rica, and he and his family are living their best life. Nothing's changed with his company. He's still running it. He's just in a different time zone, a different period of, yep. Or a different part of the world. Jason, we're seeing, I know you and I are getting a lot of calls. We're having a lot of conversations about virtual work and fraud, which is, you know, we're not doing in-person interviews. We're work from home organizations. I think you're in Boston, but you might be in Bogota. And I know certainly on an anecdotal basis, we're seeing more appetite for ways to manage risk in that situation alone. I think it's just a microcosm of how organizations are starting to think about managing risk and really taking a more global approach to it.
Yeah, and we've seen that happening. I mean, we've been in this industry for a long time, and as things started progressing here in the United States, companies started looking at their international divisions and saying, "Well, what the hell do we do there if we're going to do it here?" So we've seen quite the evolution of how companies are managing their domestic risk and comparing it to their international risk and what they're doing about it.
Yeah, Stacy, as CRAs start to hopefully pick up what we're putting down here, and they say, okay, yep, I see it. It's a good marketplace opportunity. I want to do it. I need to start talking to my customers more. How can you, Clayton, LAB, how can you guys help those organizations? What do you want to tell them?
Yeah, basically, there are challenges here. We can spend the entire hour just talking about challenges, but at the end of the day, Clayton and I have been, Clayton's Brazilian. He's an attorney from Brazil, has lived in Brazil, has been doing private sector investigations for a couple decades. We've been working in really hard things like illicit trade, corporate fraud, all the more difficult types of corporate investigations. So for us, we look at these challenges and we're able to explain to the CRAs, or so they can explain to their clients, this is a challenge. These are the limitations, and this is the product that we can give you. So the way we see it, there are very few perfect things. I mean, in screening or in life. And as long as we can say, this is what we can give you, but this is what you're not getting from this, I think then our clients are able to communicate that to their clients, and everybody's happy with the result.
So let me dig into that a little bit. So let's talk about a little more granularly. I'm doing a criminal record check in Brazil. Let's say Brazil compared to Colombia. How do those two countries work? What are the positives and what are the negatives of those records? And talk a little bit about the scope of them and how far back they go and stuff like that.
Clayton, you want to start?
Yeah, sure. You need to understand how our system is in Brazil, because if you just go and ask for a criminal record certificate, won't tell you if there is, for example, an ongoing lawsuit against that person. So we have to know the like Stacey said, we're doing this for a long time, so we saw everything, all types of cases passes to our desk. So this is one thing, a certificate does not mean that you are being sued for a crime, because sometimes criminal lawsuits in Brazil take a long time, like 10 years or so. So you need to know how to check, and you need to know what your client is expecting. Oh no, I want to know if this guy has been sued or only convictions. So that's where our expertise can make our clients' lives easy,
Yeah. Go ahead,
Stacey.
No, and in Colombia, I mean, there's like in a lot of countries, there's a lot of different ways you can approach it. It seems like, oh, a criminal record check, there should be just one way that I do it and everybody does it. But there's actually a lot of approaches. And one of the most simple approaches that I see companies using that don't have the background knowledge is what is referred to in Colombia as a criminal record check. But as we know, because we've done the tests, we've been working on the ground, we know that there are a ton of limitations to that certificate. The information is not updated. The person could have been sitting in jail for 6 months and the certificate still comes up with a negative, or that the person has no criminal record. There's different ways through access or through going in through different IPs that I can, or anybody can manipulate at that information to change the result. So that what we look at is similar to what Clayton says, we have to know, we know what the information is and how to get it. So I know the limitations of that. What else do I need to look at to complement that information? Do I need to look at criminal litigation and other points of information to make a more complete package?
So it really does. It sounds a lot less like a background check and a lot more like an investigation that you guys have to do there because of the complexities of the records and where they exist and how they're reported.
Yes and no, but it doesn't necessarily make it extremely time consuming in the sense that it takes us 2 weeks to do it. It doesn't make it terribly expensive. It's just that we need to make it, instead of just going to one single source, we need to check several boxes to give the most complete product that we can.
Yeah. One other thing that is common, especially in Brazil, are the aliases. We have more than
The
six
aliases, right?
aliases. Oh,
Yes,
yes.
aliases.
Sorry. We have more than 6 million people with the last name Silva, like our president. So, we need to use different markers like full name, tax ID, date of birth, even place of birth, so we can check all those boxes to have the right person, so this is a big issue in Brazil too.
Yes, your name, if you're of Mexican or Latin American descent, your name is not just Kevin Bachman or Jason Morris.
No.
There's family names, there's maternal names that are
Yeah.
Yep.
attached. Clayton, there's a recent example in a Brazilian mayoral election, right? You want to share that story?
Yeah. We are going to have an election in October here in Brazil, a municipal for mayor. And one of the candidates accused another one of having a record of cocaine use, a criminal record. And then end up was not the other candidate, was a guy with the same name. So I even joke with some people, say, hey, if that candidate had higher lab, this would not have happened, So the guy is suing the guy for misinformation or fake news that is, on everybody's mouth now. So yeah, it's an interesting case,
And as experts, you're like, oh yeah, that's 1 + 1 = 2 for us.
Yeah,
What,
Kevin, just
yes.
on that note, because it's a really common problem, but when Latin Americans move to the United States, they move with, four or more names. So a lot of times in the US documentation, a name gets dropped, or the middle name just becomes an initial. And so if we are just sent the information that the individual is legally registered as in the United States, that's not sufficient for us to do the search without the alias problem of, having all these homonym names. So we actually need a lot of, or for the best results, we need the legal name that the person has or had when they were living in Latin America.
Yes.
Are there any other things that you can use to identify criminal records aside from names?
In Brazil, tax
Yeah.
ID is very important because tax ID in Brazil is national. It's one number for the person for his entire life or all over Brazil. But the ID, the normal ID, you can issue an ID in each one of the 27 states that we have. I can have like 27 different IDs, So,
Wow.
yeah, that's a huge problem. So, full name, date of birth, tax ID, those are the markers that we use for the checks.
Yeah, and in several countries like Colombia, Paraguay, and there are several others, the databases aren't set up for name checks. So we have to go in with the person's ID number that's referred to as a cédula in the Spanish-speaking Latin American countries. And so that's, a number that the person, it's like, it's not as much of a confidential number as a social security number, but it's the person's identifying number. So if we have that, it doesn't matter, what name identifiers we receive in some countries.
What I'm really fixated on now, and I really like the direction of this conversation because you do have to speak out of both sides of your mouth at the same time. As I look through our attendee list and I see end users here, I see suppliers, I see CRAs, all listening to us have the same conversation. At the beginning of the call, we talked about the opportunity to grow your business, increase revenue, serve your clients better, right? And I mentioned the historical challenges of that complexity, uncertainty, and it kind of, for so many years in our space, it is CRAs have gotten to water's edge, either really aggressively selling this product or pushing back a bit when clients ask about it. You can't really have one without the other. Like, you still have to understand the complexity, but you don't have to do it all yourself anymore. Behind the scenes, as we're hearing from Stacy and Clayton, and even as CRAs, you have to eat that complexity. You have to understand it and manage it internally so your customers don't see it. And historically, over the last 20 years, where I feel this product has not taken off is CRAs and end users are having these same complexity conversations together. Like, hey, can you do Brazil? I don't know. Let me see. And then they make 4 phone calls in 3 days, get back. And it's just not a great model. What's exciting for me is we're kind of moving away from this world where that complexity is kind of handled in the back end. I'm hearing the two of you talk about specific examples. And if I'm a CRA, I'm just kind of thinking to myself, well, I got somebody who knows how to do this. You know, maybe I don't need to know every single detail on my end. That's kind of, really comforting.
I think, Kevin, the positive thing about that is, and Clayton and I have both had this situation time and time again where, our CRA client writes us or calls us frantically with this question that the end user has about a specific piece of, a specific check. And so the good thing with Lab is that it's who's answering that. It's not going through the US to some administrative person. That our clients contact Clayton and I directly. And a lot of the times we know the information off the top of our heads, or we have it saved somewhere, or in a couple phone calls, we can get back to them right away. So if they're, if all these caveats and limitations cause questions, we can quickly find the answers and get those to the client.
Since we have this slide up, is there any more common challenges that you think that people should really understand?
Yeah, I think number one is really because sometimes, like Stacy said, about pricing, not that the price is expensive, but is slightly different from US. Because, the information is public, but in Latin America, sometimes public does not mean easy access, So you need to know where to look and what to look, So that's one of the things that we explain to people that is going to do background checks in Latin America.
I think when you say expensive, I think it's time that our end user clients understand that it can be a little more expensive and nuanced to do international background screening, but lawsuits are really expensive too. By not doing them. So that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah.
I wish you'd say more. We can do an hour on that, Jason. Stacy, you were gonna weigh in.
Yeah, I was just gonna touch on the corruption and fraud, we could do an entire hour on that. I mean, Latin America does not have the best reputation when it comes to being transparent, a transparent region. So there is corruption, there is fraud, there's corruption and fraud in the public sector. The public sector is where the information is stored. And that varies, that situation varies greatly from one country to the other. In Venezuela, for example, it is very, very unfortunately to say it this way, it's very common that someone can get their criminal record erased by paying. I mean, that's a situation.
It's also very common in Venezuela now to get your plane repossessed.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. We were talking today at breakfast that apparently they're changing the date of Christmas too. Yeah. So it's just a matter of knowing, in Venezuela that happens. That can happen. But the record could have been erased. The person would have had the money to do it, the means to do it. So in our opinion, it's still worthwhile to do the check, but just know that there could be something there that's not there. And 20 years ago, when I first started in the private sector in Latin America, a lot more countries had that problem. Now it's much more difficult to erase records, to alter records in other countries. It's not impossible in some, but that's, I think, one of the things that we had in mind on that third point on the slide.
Great. Well, let's talk about lab.
One of the things that jumped out before Stacy and Clayton weigh in, one of the things that jumped out was 11 offices. Lab has 11 offices, 10 of which are outside of the US. So the first thing I kind of noticed is you guys aren't running the business out of a an office in Peoria. No offense to Peorians. But it seems you're pretty close to the ground on this.
Yeah, we're definitely boots on the ground. You know what, obviously, Clayton in Brazil, I'm in Paraguay, but in these other countries, we have our teams that are there, so we're not relying on, like you said, on somebody sitting in the US handling this.
We are really here, and I even joke with the clients, in the end of the project or something like that, I can even like teach them how to do a good caipirinha, so yeah, we are in Latin America, of course.
We have a question. It just came in. I'd like you guys' opinion on it. In the U.S., and I'll paraphrase. In the U.S., criminal record searches are moving toward a much more automated, database-driven fulfillment method. Can you provide some color around manual research, database research, et cetera? In Latin America, and obviously I know it differs by country, but can you share a few examples?
Yeah, just in broad strokes, like I think there's some perception in some areas when we say, it's more difficult or something, that it's like we call somebody and they have to go through paper files. I mean, there's very, very few places that are like that. And they're places where a lot of companies would never even have a criminal background request. So in most countries, the databases are automated, but that doesn't mean that they are online and anybody can go in and access them. Also, where things differ with the US is it's like, okay, you're an investigator in Latin America. It doesn't give you any additional access to a special database or something like that.
Okay.
So that the governments are automated. That doesn't mean that there aren't errors and whatnot in the way information is inputted. We do find that sometimes, but it's more like the names or date of births or something have errors. But what we don't necessarily see it going towards is the easily available access in most countries where just anybody can go in and check the criminal record. There are some exceptions to that, but generally I would say it's not going to that way, but the databases are improving, like the methods of storing information are getting better.
In Brazil, like the federal government have more money than the state government, so the federal databases are slightly better than the state databases. And the other thing, we have like 27 different state databases, one for each state. So even if it's going to the automated, it's different. Each one requires a specific type of research. So that's a big deal we face here in Brazil.
So I know we're going to see more of this on the next slide, but are you seeing, because of the criminal records and because of all the challenges you have around them, is there an increase in other services like social media screening, verification of education and employment? Are those services pretty widespread too, or are those just starting to emerge?
I would say that our next most requested service is actually credit checks. And credit checks, as you know them in the United States, are not accessible in all countries, but they are in several countries. And then in countries where they're not accessible, we can look at other financial history points. So, we have a lot of clients whose end user clients are in the financial industry. That might be why we receive a greater quantity of those kind of checks. And then I would say also clients are looking like at civil litigation. And then of course, yeah, education and employment as well.
Gotcha.
It's fascinating to me, by the way, that credit checks, you know, can be more popular internationally and that rather than domestically. And as a lot of us know here on the call, the use of credit in hiring decisions is dropped significantly over the last 20 years. I think a lot of it is tied to medical debt. Somebody who looks like a, you know, a horrible manager of finances when in fact they were just unlucky enough to get sick. So the narrative around credit domestically certainly has changed a lot. Really interesting to hear Clayton and Stacy say, no, it's still, it's emerging rather than demerging in Latin America.
Demerging. Is that a word, Kevin?
It is right now. Yeah. Another thing I was shocked to hear is that in Latin America, there's just not one button you can press to get all the criminal record information you want. That's a little background check humor for everybody. it does seem as we look at this that there, and again, we're trying to straddle the line as industry experts, all of us, between presenting to end users clarity, transparency, less friction, et cetera, while recognizing behind the scenes, yeah, there is some nuance in this. We're internalizing it. But as we look at this slide, guys, you know, criminal, employment, education, pretty widely available through most of Latin America.
So aside from credit, though, what else are you able to get? MBRs, like what else is out there?
Yeah, MBRs are out there. Honestly, we don't, you know, the demand that at least that we have isn't really huge for that. And I don't know why there isn't more demand. You know, the different like professional license checks goes hand in hand with the education verifications. Like in some countries, because of the data privacy laws, like universities won't very rarely, because they shouldn't, release information to third parties. So in some jurisdictions, you know, where and by release, like it means I need a release form special to that university in Spanish with the information of the investigator who's going to receive it. So in those areas, okay, well, maybe I can check the professional license instead of going through that whole process to check the education. Clayton, do you see any other areas that are growing in terms of demand?
Yeah, in Brazil, civil litigation, we do receive some, you know, and like say, like the specificities of each country. Like in Brazil, it's not possible to file a person to file for bankruptcy, only companies. So, you know, we don't, it falls in the civil litigation, you know, people are, you know, frauding companies and stuff like that. So you need to know where to look.
Yeah, we also do a good volume of high level executive background investigations. So when we do those cover the like the products that are on this slide and other points that may be specific to individual countries. So while this list, you know, is an interesting list, it's definitely not all inclusive of everything that we offer. And there are even countries that are not on this list where we offer services as well.
Yeah. Like participation in companies, if someone is a partner of a company, stuff like that, you know, we do more in depth too.
I would imagine that the professional, you mentioned earlier, the professional licenses would be a key service. But, you know, just imagining all the doctors that come from Latin America to work in the US or vice versa. Is that system corruptible, or is that a pretty static, reliable system to check professional licenses?
Well, that again is an hour long webinar in and of itself.
Good to know.
I mean, in some countries, you can, you know, there's still problems with university degrees being faked, fake doctors and things like that. So, I mean, if somebody's gone through that process, has a fake degree, is able to get a fake license, then it's very difficult to detect. But I would say the information, and generally in those databases is reliable. And it's interestingly, when I think from a US perspective, we think of license as like doctors and attorneys, but in Latin America, there's all sorts of different professions that fall into that database of licenses.
We have another question came in, and Jason, depending on Stacy and Clayton's answer, well, not depending on, I'm going to ask you a follow-up. What's kind of a a price point we should consider for a Latin American criminal check? You know, understanding there's by country variances, but what should we kind of conceptualize as a cost?
Yeah, that's very variable. Variable by country, by obviously we look at like what volume the client has.
Sure.
So it could be anywhere from, and also like when we say criminal record check, there's maybe in certain countries, there's more than one option.
Absolutely.
But just in broad strokes, it could be from like $50 to a couple $100.
Yeah. So 50 was in my head, right? Let's use that. Jason, what would you sell that for?
Depends on the total package. But I'd want to make some decent margins on it. You know, probably 75, 80 bucks.
Yeah. We always doubled. Buy it at 50, sell it at 100. So that's, you know, when we think of opportunity, that doesn't mean you have to do it that way. You can sell it for 75, you can sell it for 125, but we think of opportunity. We think of all the CRAs out there, those on this webinar, grinding out, you know, trying to get to 40% gross margin on a $29 background check, just hoping the candidate didn't move around or has been married or divorced three times. Like that's the grind that a lot of CRAs deal with and look at when they analyze price. The complexity, you know, and I'll go back to that word again, sometimes it's an asset. Sometimes you can sell it as a premium service. You can go to your clients and say, hey, you know, this is a Colombian criminal check and there's fraud and deceit and corruption. And let's make sure we get this right. It's going to cost you $100 to do that. People aren't going to say yes every time, but they're going to say yes a lot.
In today's media world, your company cannot, it does not want to deal with any international press for failing to do something that's very easy to do. It's why we saw such a plethora of negligent hiring lawsuits in the 90s and early aughts here in the US. You know, if you could have known, you should have known. And if the information is available to you, like it can be in Latin America, you know, just because it's more expensive doesn't mean you don't sell it.
Yeah, no, great example. And we see that on some expert witness work we get brought into. And it's like, you know, can you defend this really crappy process or product or screening package? And sometimes it's like, no, we really can't. Best of luck to you.
Right.
Others are very easy because of solutions like we're talking about here. Another question, general turnaround times. Again, some are going to take weeks, some are going to take days. How should we think of turnaround time in Latin America?
Yeah, again, totally variable. We have in certain countries like credit checks, so we can turn around in 48 hours. And other like the education verifications, I think have longer timeframes sometimes because we're waiting for the response from the university. So that could go to, you know, up to 10 business days.
Yeah. For criminal records, like in Brazil, it can be really like fast, you know, 2-3 days, we have the results.
Okay. Another one that came in, again, let me paraphrase, political, I don't know if I call it uprisings, but just, you know, social events, political events, change in government, any impact, a lot of impact, no impact, extremely variable, extremely variable.
Yeah,
right?
I didn't want to say that again, but that's something that we monitor very closely. And we are in constant contact with our clients on those points because there are things that disrupt the situations. There are things that don't, you know, there can be like a political uprising. And if, you know, it's a credit check, you know, maybe it's not going to affect that process. Now, we also cover the Caribbean. When there's a hurricane that goes through the Caribbean and there's no electricity and the police station that issues the criminal records is shut down for a week, then that completely, you know, obviously has a serious impact. But we, you know, that's one of the things that we pride ourselves on as well in terms of having the boots on the ground. Like right now, there's there's protests going on in Colombia, you know, within a few hours. We knew about it. We're looking at, okay, is this, you know, are these protests going to screw anything up for us? Is there anything that we should be telling our clients about that it's going to add on extra time on to their searches?
I mean, it sounds to me like you guys really work one-on-one with your clients to make sure that all the needs they have are customized, and you act as a true partner to them rather than just a vendor to them. It sounds like a lot of information needs to exchange hands in order for a relationship to work properly for these companies to be able to sell these products effectively.
Yeah, I think that also is the background that we come from, where we come from. Backgrounds of very complex investigations. So we're used to, you know, a lot of communication with the clients, a lot of dialogue. Obviously, once things are flowing, you know, just keep the information flowing. But, you know, we're always available, and we, you know, we answer really quickly. So,
yep. Kevin, any more questions?
Yeah, another question. Terminology and translations. Obviously, you're not providing users with Portuguese, right? It's translated to English. Are there translations by, like, criminal offense? You know, in the United States, we live in a felony or misdemeanor or in traffic, you know, or an infraction kind of world. What are some terms? You know, how does that kind of come through internationally? Are there categories? Or is it just like the offense, and you be the judge? Of course, yeah, varies by country.
Oh yeah, that's tough, you know, because like you said, a car crash here can be considered like a crime depending on the you know, motivation, on what type of crash was, you know. So yeah, it varies, you know. But yeah, we translate all to English, you know, and we try our best to make for the client to understand, because our criminal laws can be, you know, not tricky, but different from United States, you know. So yeah, but we have, you know, minor crimes or major crimes here, like in US too, you know. So we have all those things in place to inform the client when there is a hit.
This is great. I gotta tell you, I've been in this industry for nearly 30 years, and we've been doing these webinars for a hell of a long time. And we've been doing them as consultants now for a couple of years here. I learned a ton today. A lot of times when we do these, we gloss over some very high level information. And I think that our audience, you know, picks up some bits and pieces. But I think today there was some really good information discussed here. And I really appreciate it. And I think that our listeners appreciated it. Again, been doing this a long time, and I learned a lot today.
Final thoughts, Stacey?
Oh, we're going to be at the conference, at the PBSA conference, and we have a booth, as the slide said, at 6:32. So Clayton and I will be at the booth. So we look forward to anybody who wants to go into more detail to seeing you at the conference.
Yeah, that's
Clayton, anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, we'll have some Latin America candies, you know, good ones. We try to bring cachaça or caipirinha, but they don't allow us in immigration. So we'll be candies and some Brazilian flip-flops.
Fantastic.
Our next-door neighbors are natives of Mexico. And I was introduced to Mexican candy and just like spicy candy. And if you haven't tried it, I don't know if that's what you brought, but... highly what's that?
You need to go to the booth,
okay,
to find out.
Okay, at the booth. Well, and Stacey and Clayton will also be at the iCubed Happy Hour, which is from 2 to 3 at the Yard House, at the hotel. Some final thoughts on my end. This really is low-hanging fruit. Doesn't mean it's easy. Doesn't mean that we're not going to encounter complexity. We're going to have to work back and forth with our vendors or our clients. But when we think of untapped revenue, it's not beating up your vendors. It's not slashing your prices to the bone, in my opinion. It's new products and services. It's convincing those clients that if somebody is from a different country, do the same kind of screen that you do for somebody domestically in the US, even if it costs you an extra 75 or 100 bucks. To Jason's point, it's a heck of a lot easier on the front end than what lawyers charge or what expert witness expert witnesses charge. You know, it's all part of good risk management. And that's ultimately, I think, the base of our industry. We want to thank everybody for attending. We'll try and give you 2 minutes of your life back, and looking forward to seeing many of you in Boston. Take care, everyone.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks. Bye-bye.